The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Investors should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of investment company products carefully before investing. The prospectus contains this and other information about the investment company. Prospectuses may be obtained from your advisor and should be read in full. All guarantees are backed by the claims-paying ability of the issuing insurer. Withdrawals and death benefits are subject to income tax. If withdrawals and other distributions are received prior to age 59 and a half, a 10% penalty may apply. Shares, when redeemed, may be worth more or less than the original cost.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to this edition of the Retirement and IRA Show. Today we've got no live calls. However, we do have several emails we're going to try to get to. I know we've got a couple of Social Security questions that have come in, as well as an annuity question. That'll probably take us to the end of the show. If not, we will things go a little faster than normal, which rarely they do. We will dig up another because we have quite a few emails to get caught up on here. So, my name is Chris. Jim's here as well, typing madly, answering texts or emails or messaging or playing words with friends. Do you even do that anymore?
I do, but not
okay.
Not during the show anymore, no.
He kind of got a little addicted, and it was interfering with his ability to function on a daily basis.
To multitask, I'm pretty sure.
So,
did we explain to listeners that this is the... We're not...
Live.
Live.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And
so they won't.
So this podcast will actually be coming out on or around St. Patrick's Day next
correct.
Week, right?
March 17th is when this should roll out on the iTunes platform. And then it's also available on several other podcast platforms as well. If you're able to listen to the show, you've obviously found it. So we don't have to tell you where to find it. If you're hearing my voice now, you've succeeded.
Very right. good. So we do want to let people know one more time, though. Or several more times, perhaps, that normally we record Monday afternoons, 3:30 Mountain Time, and any iTunian or Androidian who happens to be listening to this on the Apple or Android platform can listen in live and ask us live questions. Last week, if you remember, Chris, we got mm-hmm. two phone calls and took up the whole show, both Social Security questions, mm-hmm. but pretty much took up the entire show, and we like that. We like they were very interesting and complicated questions.
They were great questions. Yeah.
They mm-hmm. went down rabbit holes. Mm-hmm.
They were a little bit complicated, as you mentioned, but they actually were things that many people run into, so... I was glad we were able to cover those.
Okay. But anybody else want to do that, simply call the radio show, and you can also listen live as we're recording. So you do that by going to our website, Jim Helps. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Right there on the homepage, kind of towards the top, is a streaming live button. I think when we're actually streaming live, it looks different, right? It says broadcasting now or something, doesn't it?
I believe so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of tell when we're broadcasting, and I think you just click it, mm-hmm. and you can listen through your computer speakers or through your iPhone or Android phone. Mm-hmm. Is there an app for that, too? Is there an app people can download?
There is, the platform, and when you that little streaming tool that's on the website, there's a way to go to the platform where we broadcast this from. It's called Mixlr, M-I-X-L-R. And from there, they have some more tools that you could use.
And you
can actually sign up for an account where you'll get an alert when we start broadcasting, things like that. You don't have to do that to listen. You can listen right off of our webpage on that streaming tool. But if you want to be reminded, if you will, whenever we go live, having an account on there, you can set it to do that
for
you.
Or if they just want to mm-hmm. stream it through their smartphone, they can get the Mixlr app.
Right, right.
M-I-X-L-R. So if you go to the App Store or Google Play Store, is it called Google Play Store?
Yes.
Okay. If you go to the iTunes App Store for iTunians or our Androidians, go to the Google Play Store, download the Mixlr app, M-I-X-L-R, and I guess follow the directions, and you'll be able to, I guess, make the Retirement and IRA show a favorite or something. Mm-hmm. And when we start broadcasting, the app will let you know, and you can listen right through your phone as well. But we do this. We record live for a reason. We love taking calls and answering questions. The whole show, as you know, Chris, has kind of evolved into a Q&A show.
Pretty much, yeah.
Hence the reason I want to come out with the Retirement and IRA Show Part 2. And I know you don't have the time to do that, so we're waiting to hire a new advisor in the office who will learn what you're doing over there, because I have no idea what you're doing over there to make this actually happen. But we're going to go back on the second version of the Retirement and IRA Show, come out twice a week in the future. And on the second show is going to be very similar to today's show, where we're going to drill down into one topic at hand. That topic is on flexible premium deferred annuities, because we got a very long question on them. Mm-hmm. But before I start teaching listeners what a flexible premium deferred annuity is, we're going to answer two quick Social Security questions to try to make our list of questions email queue down. Because we get a lot of people emailing us questions, and granted, they're patient. They have to be patient because it takes us a while to answer them all. And that's the other reason we host a live broadcast of what is essentially the Q&A show. It allows callers to jump right to the top of the line. Correct. No sending an email and waiting for an answer. Just give us a call. So again, listeners, that'll be every Monday, except for this Monday. It's spring break, and Chris is flying away to an undisclosed location. He's not letting anyone know. But he's going on vacation with the whole brood?
No, small brood this time.
Oh, just you and a missus?
And one child.
The little girl?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Everyone else is busy
doing
other
stuff. It's Disney World.
It's
got to be Disney World. Where are you going to take a 5-year-old or a 7-year-old?
She's 10 now, Jim.
Well, where are you going to take a 10-year-old?
You could go any place. We took her to Vietnam last summer. We took her to Mexico over Christmas.
Oh.
She travels wherever we go.
She travels well?
She does. She fits right in our bag, and it's no problem.
Right in the carry-on. But that's why we are recording today. This is still Thursday the 9th, I think. And this isn't going to play. Is it the 9th or the 8th today?
It's the 8th.
Thursday the 8th. Mm-hmm. So this is going to play on around Saturday the 17th, St. Patrick's Day. And then the following week we'll be back to live.
If we knew that ahead of time, we should have put an Irish spin on the show somehow.
We could have. I didn't realize it was St. Patrick's Day. I didn't even wear green. I got black on.
Well, it's not actually St. Patrick's Day as we're recording this, so you're off the hook, but on that day, you need to do that. Okay. Although it's Saturday, you'll be at home. Nobody will even know. Unless you go hiking.
I'll probably be hiking on that Saturday, so mm-hmm. I'll wear a green shirt.
Good idea.
Or green pants. I'll do something.
Some people take
green.
It very seriously.
Yeah, yeah. They take
and
that
they
same
physically
Patrick's
accost you if you,
if you don't wear green.
Green, right? Yeah.
Okay, so let's do the two Social Security questions first, and then we will jump into a nice question on flexible premium deferred annuities.
Good.
Okay, so this came from a listener. We, as always, are going to protect their anonymity, and we're going to call them. You always laugh when I say that. You don't give me credit now for nailing that
word.
Well,
you'd think after all this time you could say it a little more smoothly. Anonymity.
Anonymity.
Yeah, like that.
Do, 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 do,
instead
do.
Of Anna, Nima.
But if I go slow.
I know. I realize why you're doing it.
Because if I try it fast, mm-hmm. I haven't mastered it that much yet. Okay. But anonymity, mm-hmm. I have definitely mastered. Mm-hmm. Kind of like a bomb in a bull snowman. Snowman? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So to protect the privacy of this Georgia listener, we are going to call them George.
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
Okay, he begins, and I think you already answered this question to him, but now we're going to answer mm-hmm. it to our listeners.
Yeah.
It begins with, I have been waiting for reimbursement of an underpayment in the amount of $400 for my Social Security disability benefits since July of 2017. I have visited the local Social Security office on several occasions thinking this was being handled. Is there a form I am supposed to fill out in order to have my $400 repaid? If so, where do I get that form and what is it called? Thank you.
Excellent question. More broadly, I think the question is, what do I do when Social Security is messed up somehow? I'm not getting what I'm expecting. How do I fix it if the person I'm dealing with, who claims to have solved it, never gets it solved? How do we escalate a Social Security issue? At first, let me say there's no form specifically for this. There are forms to fill out requests by in writing, but there's no specific form for claiming an underpayment. He's done exactly what he should do, contact them, whether it be over the phone or live in person, usually does work better, which it sounds like he did, went into the office a couple of times. They claim it's being processed and it's going to be solved, but he's never seen the $400 since July of 2017. So what is he to do? So these are kind of general statements on how you might elevate or escalate a Social Security issue if you're running into a similar problem. First of all, maybe the most important thing, document everything. Every time you call, log it. Every time you write, log it. Every time you receive something in writing from the Social Security Administration, keep it. When you're interacting with a person, always get their name. Write a summary of the conversation. What's any dates they tell you to expect things to happen, all of that. Because if you end up having to escalate this above their head, you're going to have a lot more luck if you have detailed notes of the timeline of all the failures, if you will, things that haven't happened when they should, that you can clearly define for the person you're elevating it to, instead of, hey, I've been waiting for this and it's not working. Can you help me? That usually doesn't go over so well. Usually what they do is try to push you back into the normal channel because they feel you're just being impatient or something. But if you have detailed records showing, in this case, that he's been working on this since last July, then you're much more likely to get help as you escalate this. So another thing I found handy is the second thing, follow up with one person. And this is why it's important to get the person's name, who maybe the person who said they were going to solve this for you, get their name and extension so that you can follow up directly with that person. That does not mean hound them on a daily basis. These people are very busy. Social Security Administration, as far as the administrative part, is underfunded and understaffed. You can blame Congress for that, since they're the ones who essentially make this decision. As more and more people are claiming Social Security, you'd think they would need more and more people to handle it from a customer service standpoint. That's logical. Instead, what they've done is they've tried to automate more things and have people do things through their website, which can be handy. But something like this, you need a person to help you out, and they're overworked. So give them a little pity, but follow up them maybe once a week. Maybe a little, if I haven't heard anything, just give them a little tickler, record it if you're allowed to in your state. Not every state allows you to do so. So you actually have a perfect record of what was discussed, but if not, you can write down notes. The next thing, if things have all failed and you're following up with one person and they're not getting you satisfaction in your issue, escalate it to a supervisor. So you need to essentially ask to speak to the supervisor in that office. And this is where all that documentation is going to be handy. You're going to have that. You'll be able to quickly and easily kind of draw the timeline for them of the person that you're asking to escalate you to the supervisor. And they'll quickly see from your written notes that you do definitely have an issue you need help with. The supervisor is not, sometimes we've talked about a technical expert in the office. Technical experts are above the regular caseworker, but they're there for very technical items. It's not really to solve a customer service issue. So you're going to want to go to the manager or supervisor of that particular office. Then if you have no luck there, the last thing you pull out of your pocket, call your congressperson. That Social Security answers to Congress, and inquiries from Congress must be replied to within a certain period of time. So when your congressperson intervenes for you, they will get an answer. So this is not something, and you might say, well, I'm just going to do that first. you kind of want to reserve this for when you really need it. It's almost like using antibiotics too much.
Because you have to get them to actually take it seriously.
Right. So if you're hounding them all the time or something, your congressperson's going to kind of just tell his staff, yeah, they're just... Here they are calling us again to do something that they can do on their own. Again, you have all this documentation showing all your failures, and you say, you know, I've tried everything I can. I hate to bother you, but, you know, I'm a constituent of yours in your district. Can you please help me out with this? And they will then forward on a request to the Social Security Administration through their channels. And when this is deployed, I've seen it work very, very well.
And it's not the congressperson who's actually doing it. The staff is putting it all together, right, stamping their signature on it, and sending it in.
Right.
The one thing that I'll point out is this just highlights it's a bureaucracy you're dealing with here. It's not a private company, and it's getting lost in the bureaucracy, and that's very easy to do. So you're going to have to be a little tenacious and, I guess, decide how important is that $400 and how hard are you going to try to get it, and then follow those steps.
Yep. So that's how you'd approach not just this issue, but similar issues where things aren't getting resolved.
Okay. Well, that one was fairly straightforward. Mm-hmm. Okay. The second one, as we were chatting about it earlier today, Chris, is it's a bit Social Security, a bit taxes, and a bit we can't really give him a straight answer.
Okay.
So it's a bit of everything.
Okay.
We'll answer what we can and let him decide how he wants to move on from there. This is a New Jersey resident, so he's probably digging out from the big snowstorm that they had there.
True.
Again.
Sounds like it's been pretty bad.
Yeah, mom's been complaining about, not that she's in Jersey, she's in Massachusetts, but she'll be flying out tomorrow, hopefully, to Florida again. But she said the last couple of storms.
She didn't get out quite in enough time.
She's been staying for the month of February, which she hasn't done in probably over a decade for a variety of reasons I won't get into. But she is realizing how miserable New England weather is.
She remembers now why she wasn't sticking around in that month.
Exactly. Yeah. And, of course, she's trying to fly out tomorrow. And I told her, I said, if the snow ends, they should have it cleared up. You should be okay.
Yeah.
Alrighty, so it begins. I have an S corporation, and usually take the Social Security maximum contribution, $128,700 in 2018, in W-2 wages. So what he's saying there, folks, is he's probably owns his own company. Mm-hmm. It's registered as an S corp. We're not going to get into S corp, C corp, LLC, private partnerships, all that. It's just the business structure of his company is a S corporation that does allow you through an S corp to pay yourself a wage. Mm-hmm. We file as an S corp here in the office, so I can pay myself a wage. So he is paying himself a wage, and he's paying himself the maximum earnings limit that Social Security is applied to. All your wages are not subject to Social Security taxes. They cap out what amount of your wages is subject to Social Security taxes, listeners. And in this case, he has the number. I'm going to assume it's correct. I didn't check it. I think it is $128,700 for 2018. So if he was earning $328,700 as wages, only $128,700 in 2018. 18 would be subject to Social Security taxes. The other 200,000 would not be subject to Social Security taxes. Will be subject to Medicare taxes, but not Social Security. And I think that number's correct. I just looked it up the other day.
It's 128,400.
128,400. Okay. So he's overpaying himself
by $300 whole. Yeah. Which just means those $300, they didn't withhold Social Security taxes from there. You do still pay Medicare taxes. So there are some payroll taxes, but no Social Security.
No Social Security
anything
taxes.
Over 128,400 in 2018. In 2017, just so people know, it was 127,200. So it's gone up about $1,200 or about $100 a year a month.
And there's a push by some in Congress to remove that. They feel it's a giveaway to the rich, and they want to tax all wages to Social Security as a way of shoring up the Social Security system. Of course, they're not going to increase the benefits commensurate for the increased taxes, so that is essentially going to turn Social Security from a self-insurance pool of workers into an income redistribution mechanism, but now we're going down a political rabbit hole.
They wouldn't have to cap it. They could, and it would still help out, because as we all know, once you get into these higher earnings brackets, your earnings as they go up and you pay more in, a lower percentage of that is reflected in your increased benefits. So even if they just remove the cap and allowed people's benefits to go up,
it's not going to be that major.
It will help the overall picture because more will be going in than will be flowing out in benefits. But it would absolutely be more impactful, of course, if they capped benefits at their current maximum, but allowed the...
Right.
And that's mostly what people are talking
about to
get the most benefit for the... Not for the beneficiaries, but the benefit for the system and its financial stability.
Excuse me. Okay. So back to our email. We kind of went off on a little tangent there. Okay. He wrote to us and he said, with that in mind, I was thinking about lowering my W-2 wages. So he's thinking of not paying himself, folks, $128,700 anymore. And he writes, I think, part of his reasoning why. He writes, I have 25 years where I paid the maximum contributions. And then he put in parentheses 35 total. So Chris and I have to assume he means 25 years he hit and paid at the maximum Social Security wage level that we were just talking about. But he has 35 years total paid into Social Security. Right. So Chris and I have to assume 10 of those years he was not at maximum earnings yet.
But and we don't know how close he was. It was just less than maximum.
Was he a buck away or did he make nothing?
Very little.
$100.
Yeah.
Okay. And then he writes, I know they take the top 30 years to calculate my benefit.
I have to stop you there.
Chris stopping me there. So why don't you explain to him? His math is a little wrong there.
The one fact he has, there's a... sounds like we're nitpicking. He was off by $300 on the maximum. That's not a huge deal, but this is a pretty big deal. He's claiming they only consider 30 years of earnings to create your benefit. It's actually your top 35 years, not 30. So he's envisioning in this that he's maxed out 25 of the 30 they're going to count. Not true. He's maxed out 25 of the 35 that they're going to consider. So if he's trying to get 35 maximum earnings years in order to maximize his Social Security benefit, he's got 10 more years to go.
And that's exactly what he's doing because he continues. He's asking us, should I continue to take the maximum in W-2 wages for at least 5 more years? So he's still fixated on he has 35 years paid in, 25 years max, 10 years non-max. He thinks they're going to throw out the lowest five because he thinks they're only going to look at 30 years. So he, in his mind, thinking, I need 5 more years of maximum earnings to get it because he writes, I have only retirement accounts and would like to maximize the amount of Social Security I can receive. I'm 54 years old. So Chris and I are assuming, again, listener, this is what you're trying to do. He's trying to get the full maximum benefit, and in order to do that, he has to earn the maximum Social Security limit every single year. he is under the impression he only has 5 more years to go. The reality is he has 10 more years to go.
If his goal is to absolutely maximize his retirement benefit, that's true. He's got to have 35 years where he's hit the maximum earnings limit. Now, when you kind of threw this at me before we started recording, I pointed out that he may not, when he really crunches the numbers and looks at it, be that differently off or have a much lower retirement benefit, even if he has a few years that aren't quite maximum. You have to earn a lot less to see a noticeable difference in your Social Security when we're looking, because remember, we're looking at 35 years. So if you've only got a few years, the way they weight them, you know, you only have a few of the total, it's not going to affect the overall benefit that much. Especially when they're not zeros. He says he's got earnings in those years. They're just not maximum. So I know he's fixated on this. I want to get my maximum amount. But if he crunches the numbers and he finds that, you know, if he doesn't maximize it, if he doesn't max everything out the next fill in the blank, you know, 35 versus 30 years, maybe it's only a $10 or $20 difference per month. Might not be hardly even noticeable. But we'd have to see his earnings record. We can figure this out as far as
absolutely. That's what I was going to say.
What he's accrued at this point, what he's earned under his current situation, and then we can project some assumptions. Continue to do what he's proposing, maximize for another 5 years or 10 years, show the difference between the two. So there are ways, there's software that will figure this out for
us. We do have software, listener, who can do a lot of this. We normally charge $75. It's going up to $120. We just haven't raised it yet. But we normally charge $75 for an optimization. We let our listeners know that all the time. His case is a little bit more involved, Chris, because we would have to be running multiple projections, so we wouldn't be able to do it at $75, but it isn't going to be outrageously expensive whether we do it, whether another advisor does it, or whether he finds a website where he can buy a subscription and play with the software himself. Mm-hmm. But there is software that will allow you. The key is you need all those earnings years because you have to type in that earnings. So you have to be very careful. Some software doesn't go by earnings years. They want you to get your PIA estimates from Social Security and just put those numbers in, and that won't work
here.
That
won't do what he's needing.
You need to use software where you're actually going to put each year's earnings. You're going to put the year, then the dollar amount of W-2 Social Security earnings you had that year. And then going forward, the software also has to have the ability to let you put future years in, not what you're averaging, not how many more years you're going to work and you think you're going to earn this much, what you think you're going to earn each and every year. So
just also out of full disclosure, Social Security does have a tool that will do this, but it's very clunky to use and difficult to make the projections that you're trying to make. They can be done. It's not very user-friendly. I guess that's what you get with a free tool from the government. It does work, but it is not a very pleasant process, and it's not real clear what assumptions they're making. You have to really dig into some things to change some of the assumptions the way you want them. But they do actually have
a tool. I know they have
you could do that.
From everything I read on the FPA forum, the few advisors who have ventured into using it quickly say, just buy some software.
I agree, but I just want to let people know because they might be thinking, hey, I know Social Security has something like that. Technically, they do, but it's
clunky.
It's not a pleasant
a typical bureaucratic free program.
Yeah.
Okay, so the things that I want to point out to him, though, that threw up red flags, I don't know also, and part of his calculation needs to be, he's going to lower his income. That threw up a red flag with me because he's an S-Corp. And he did indicate, he said he showed, even after paying himself the maximum wage last year, 2017, the S-Corp generated $70,000 in profit for 2017. I'm going to guess some of that profit might have been sent to him as a dividend. That's the whole idea of an S-Corp. After you pay yourself a salary, any other profits you remove from the S-Corp, you can do as a qualified dividend that won't be subject to Social Security and Medicare. So it'll save, you'll still have to pay income taxes on it, but it saves you the self-employment tax and the payroll tax. But remember, as a self-employed person, you're paying both the business and your own, so it's essentially double. So it can save you over 15%, and a lot of small businesses
do that.
Yeah,
but remember, he's already maxed it out. So even if he pays himself additional wages, he's
not
going to
have the Social Security.
Right. The only thing he's saving in this case is the Medicare side.
Correct.
Now, what he's planning to do is lower it.
Correct.
So that he's not exposing quite as much of that 128 figure to the Social Security taxes
and
of that 15%.
Right. So from a tax perspective, I don't know how much of the savings is going to be. Again, it's going to take number crunching on that. Justin or any tax person can do that. But what I'm cautioning them on is the IRS looks at S-Corps and what they're paying themselves in salary very closely, because they don't want companies or individuals playing with the numbers, underpaying them, and then maximizing out as a dividend and not paying into Social Security and Medicare. Because if he goes from 128, where he fully paid into Social Security and Medicare, all the way down to 50, I'm just making that up, and he says, I'm going to go all the way down to 50, I'm going to take the rest as a dividend, and he ever gets audited or the IRS ever pulls that, I don't know what is an audit trigger for them, they will look into this. And if they will go down on you hard, if they feel you are purposefully underpaying you. So have a good reason, listener, handy if you do get audited to justify going from 128 down to whatever you're going to lower your salary
to. Like maybe you went part-time.
Yeah. I stopped working. Exactly.
I only work half-time now.
Yep.
So
it's the partial retirement. Right. Have a reason and be able to justify that reason. Now, if you say I went part-time and you think, oh, okay, but you're earning the same gross income.
That could totally happen.
Yeah, but you could.
If you have other employees.
Have
if it's just you, that's a different question. He doesn't say that.
I don't know, but what I'm warning him on is you have to be able to justify it.
Yes.
If Diane, my personal CPA, we use a business CPA for our little entity here. If she was here, she would be warning this because she warns me on it.
Yep.
And you have to be able to justify your salary. It's not, well, this year I want to max out Social Security. Next year I want to take it as a dividend and save on taxes. You just can't play with your salary that level. So the IRS does look at that. Just make sure you can justify all that. But beyond that, I think the more intriguing question is, he's 54, he's my age. I would be more interested in trying to help him determine or encourage him to determine, how much secure income does he need? How much Social Security does he need? Is this extra? How much extra is he going to get by maxing it out? And could he replicate or get more than that by legitimately lowering his salary, taking that money, and doing something else with it?
Right. There's all kinds of interesting retirement planning opportunities for a self-employed person with an S-Corp compared to an individual. The menu of choices of what they can do is much broader.
And long-term care insurance is popping up. Could he benefit from long-term care coverage? Does he have enough Social Security where he doesn't need to max out those next 10 years and maybe start offering long-term care? I don't know what his business is like, but businesses, and I wish Justin was here on that part, but businesses can get some special treatments for long-term care insurance that individuals can't get. Maybe you're eligible for this, maybe you're not. I think you have to be a C-Corp, not an S-Corp for that. But I'm just throwing that out as an option. Where are the weaknesses in his retirement plan? Maybe his secure income is to a level where he doesn't need to pay in. Conversely, I don't know if he has a wife. Maybe the wife is substantially younger than him or even marginally younger than him, but has a longer life expectancy. And having a larger Social Security benefit as a survivor benefit to leave to his wife might be a better option as a full planning strategy. There's just a lot of moving parts here where I told you I wasn't feeling comfortable telling him this is definitely what you need to do. You need to really take a big picture approach and don't just fixate on Social Security or fixate on lowering your income.
Right. He's asking a good question, but the reason he's asking this question is he's not quite sure how this works, which leads me to believe there's all these other things he isn't considering that are maybe even more important. And you listed some of them right here. he really needs some help. He needs some help
to make sure
that over the next 10 years as he moves towards retirement, he's not leaving money on the table, opportunities on the table, tax benefits on the table through doing something more than just manipulating his earnings versus dividends for Social Security purposes.
And the other thing I would want to look at is what is his income in retirement going to be? Mm-hmm. And is it going to subject 85% or more of his Social Security to taxes. So now I would start saying here is, okay, well, wait a minute. You're going to pay more in Social Security taxes now to max out your earnings to get a marginally small difference perhaps in actual Social Security benefit that you're going to end up giving a lot of it away in taxes yet again on it. And should he instead consider some sort of Roth strategies to get some tax-free things going? So there's a lot of moving parts here I would want to evaluate before I simply tell him, oh yeah, it makes sense to do.
For sure.
Okay. So that's what we wanted to say. And we can't obviously listen to answer and start crunching all these numbers because we don't have them. You didn't give them to us. But we're trying to give you ways of looking at this. Bear in mind, you want to maximize your Social Security. But if you're also going to have earnings in retirement that's going to subject up to 85% of your Social Security to income taxes, which is the maximum amount right now, I think in the future they'll drag in that last 15% that's tax-free and tax that as well. I don't know, listener, maybe not maximizing your Social Security anymore would be more wise from a tax perspective and instead start getting money in a non-retirement account. You said all your other money is in retirement accounts. If all your money is in 401ks, 403bs, IRAs, 457s, and it's all going to be subject to income taxes, don't ignore. We talk about this all the time, Chris. There are three pools of money you're going to have in retirement. Money that you withdraw from that will always be subject to taxes. Money that you withdraw from that may be subject to taxes, and money that you withdraw from that will never be subject to taxes. When he says he only has retirement accounts, that's telling me he doesn't have any in the maybe, which would be a regular bank account or a regular brokerage account. Don't overlook those. Those are wonderful accounts. They get step up in basis at your death. You can control the taxation. They're taxed as capital gain, not income. You can really do a lot with that. Maybe he needs to start growing that. He probably earns too much to contribute money directly to a Roth, but if he's self-employed, open up a Roth 401k.
Exactly.
Start getting some money in that, perhaps, because if he's really spent all this time growing his always taxable retirement accounts, I get news for you, listener. When you hit 70 in 16 more years, 70 and a half technically, you're going to get nailed in RMDs. And that's going to drag a lot of your Social Security into taxation. So there's a lot you need to be looking here that I don't think he's looking at.
Totally agree.
Yeah, okay. All right. We got to get going because I want to answer this question, but I also have a lunch meeting at, what time is it? Oh, we got a half hour yet.
Yeah.
Okay. This next one is very interesting. I could talk about this next topic, Chris, for hours. So
easy.
Your job is to keep me on track.
Okay.
Don't let me go down too many
rabbit
holes.
I haven't heard this question, so this will be. I'll just have to dynamically
annuities,
adjust.
Which I understand, and I've talked often of Ken Fisher and my total disgust of his I hate annuities and so should you. I don't love annuities. I don't hate them. I'm agnostic. But I understand them, and there's a place for them. And he's talking about a real specialized annuity that we have never talked about on this radio show. So that's why I was excited about it. I was like, ooh, I've never talked about these yet on the radio show.
Perfect.
Okay, so he writes, and again, he gives us his name, but we're going to call him George, and he is from Utah.
Oh, pretty close by here.
He's
our neighbor.
Ute. Is that what they call themselves, Utes?
They're Native American, maybe. I think it's a Utahan or something if they're just a...
Utoians?
Sounds like utopian. I don't know. He's from Utah. How about that?
What would you call someone from Utah?
I don't think they call them all Utes. Utes is a Native American tribe.
Yeah, I know. From the Utah area.
Right, right. So I don't think they just call everyone from Utah a Ute. I don't believe so. I could be wrong.
Hmm.
Maybe they'll... send us a message after hearing this and let us know.
Yeah. What do you call yourselves from Utah?
I don't
Utah?
Refer to them as Utes. I say they're from Utah.
Joe Pesci did.
Those are young people he was talking about.
The Utes.
Yeah.
Excuse me, did you say two Utes?
Yeah, two Utes.
Okay. You don't see Joe around anymore, is he? I know he's still alive, but he doesn't do shows anymore.
Well,
he had that whole mobster thing going for a while.
Yeah.
But he's funny as well.
For sure.
And I haven't seen him in a movie in a long time. Mm-hmm. He was always good. Okay, dear Jim, Chris, and Justin. Too bad Justin isn't here to get his accolades. Dear Jim, Chris, and Justin, thank you for a wonderful podcast. I'm a longtime listener from Utah. You got a star in your map from Utah, so...
I do.
Yep. And then he talks about how you usually play the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, so I'll skip all that. Mm-hmm. Let's get to the nitty-gritty. As I have been... Oh, he had to put a word in.
What? He stumped you with a word?
Wow, I totally missed that. As I have been thinking about ways...
By the way, Joe Pesci is going to be in a movie to be released next year. Distributed on Netflix, called The Irishman, with Robert De Niro and
he's
Martin
Italian. Spurs. He's not Irish.
He's in the movie. He's not The Irishman, probably, but he's in the movie.
Oh, all right. I'll have to watch that.
Although it says he's starring in it, so maybe he is.
Maybe that's the whole joke.
An
Irishman who's Italian.
I don't know.
Anyways, been thinking about ways...
Contemplating?
No. Reminiscing? No. What did he write?
I've been ruminating.
Ruminating?
Yeah.
I never even heard of ruminating.
Hmm. It's like pondering, going over in your mind.
So I was right, thinking about.
Sure.
Ruminating is a word?
Oh, for sure.
And you've heard of it?
Yes.
All right.
I don't use it in day-to-day conversation, but...
So I bet you he's like an English professor or something.
Or he's... just not a product of the current public school system, maybe, or something. I don't know.
You saying something wrong with my education?
No, I'm saying these days.
These days. All right. Anyways,
word's probably not even mentioned in high school anymore.
As I have been ruminating about ways to sock away additional money for retirement, I stumbled on the possibility of putting after-tax money into a flexible premium deferred annuity. I understand that
FUPTA.
That's one of the reasons we never talked about it. They don't have a cute acronym like SPIA, DIA, QLAC, MIGA.
FUPTA.
Okay. I understand that I can contribute as much or as little as I want to this annuity periodically during the coming years and have an annuity when I retire based on my contributions between now and retirement. So I'll come back to what he's talking about.
Yeah.
It is my understanding that the portion of my annuity payments that are attributable to my premium payments will not be taxed, but I will pay tax on the portion of my annuity payments that are not attributable to my premiums.
Right.
Is this correct? If so, how is this calculated?
It's talking about the exclusion ratio.
Correct. And we'll get to that. Mm-hmm. Perhaps you could discuss how these annuities work, the pitfalls to look out for, the formula insurance companies use to calculate my periodic payments, how they are converted into an annuity payment, and anything else that may be useful for me to consider as I decide if I should put money into a flexible premium deferred annuity. And then he signs it, but we won't say his name. We'll call him George. Mm-hmm. Okay, I thought that was a great question because we've never talked about FPTAs before. Flexible premium.
I'm glad we have a new topic.
Flexible premium deferred annuities. So there's a few things that I want to point out. So what these annuities do, if we break down the name, if you just look at what they call themselves, it starts to make sense. The first part, flexible premium. And the second part, deferred annuity. Flexible premium means exactly what this listener said. He can put money in, generally speaking, throughout the life of the annuity. However, some insurance companies, a flexible premium, only for a certain period of time. Mm-hmm. I've seen some that are only for 6 months. I've seen others that are flexible forever. So you really need to make sure.
6 months? You've seen one that has only has a six-month window for flex premiums?
Yep, absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
So you have to make sure you understand how the annuity is structured as a flexible premium. I would recommend this gentleman, because it sounds to me like he's looking to keep putting money in, he makes sure he buys a flexible premium deferred annuity that offers that flexibility for a very long period of time, if not the life of the annuity. Why would some annuities restrict your ability to put money in? The ones that restrict more earlier are more income-driven in their chassis structure. They're more designed to generate additional income payments for you in the future. They're really designed to annuitize, as this gentleman is talking about, to turn it on into income. So they're more, they need a little bit more certainty in order to guarantee the income, and they're only going to sell individual policies. They don't want to keep taking money in later. The ones that are flexible forever, Chris, have very minimal income benefits. They're treated more as a place to get principal protection. Then there's ones that are designed for a little bit of both. So if he's really looking to maximize income, perhaps opening a series of annuities is a better option.
Right. What Jim means by that is instead of having one big one that has flexible premium payments, he instead, if he wants some flexibility, he signs up for one with a fixed payment and then later on opens another one with an additional fixed payment and so on and so forth instead to take advantage of the more favorable formula for income generation.
Correct.
In the future.
The earlier you buy a flexible premium deferred annuity, the more income you get, listener. So again, the ones with shorter periods of being able to put premiums in tend to be putting all of their oomph in an income benefit. So I don't want you to overlook them because you might get more of an income benefit from them. Ones that are designed to accept money at any time tend to underplay, Chris, the income benefit. And instead, they're selling, not selling in the sense, but their oomph, so to speak, is on the actual structure, the tax structure of annuities, that you're not forced to annuitize. You don't have to turn an annuity on into a lifetime stream of guaranteed income. And while money is inside the annuity, it grows tax deferred. So it's wonderful for people who are right now in a high tax bracket, but they think in retirement they're going to be in a lower tax bracket. So they can put money in, it can earn interest and grow tax deferred, and they can take money out in retirement when they might be in a lower tax bracket at more favorable rates. These types of flexible premium deferred annuities, which are the ones that I personally use in our office in full disclosure, is geared more towards principal protection. So they have a lot of they're not building in income benefits. They don't care. Put money in when you want. Take it out when you want. Our income benefit is so minimal, you're not going to want to turn it on. Mm-hmm. But instead, what we're offering you is a place to put money to grow tax deferred while you're in a higher income bracket and take it out in retirement in a lower bracket because you're never forced to take RMDs from annuities while you're alive and you're not going to be forced to necessarily annuitize them. So I'm just you would kind of seem shocked that some would limit and some don't. You have to understand the chassis.
I was shocked at the 6 month. That just seems like such a short period. Essentially, you're signing up for, I just want flexibility of what to put in for 6 months.
I can explain to you. I don't want to on the radio. I'll tell you the company and the product and how they design it, and you'll be, oh, wow, they're just designing this for income. Absolutely.
Okay.
So they're locking it in. Because if they're going to pay an income guarantee, they got to look at their risk, and they don't know. They have to control when money comes in. And
they have to make long-term bets.
Exactly.
With the money.
They have to make long-term decisions. Yeah. Whereas a true flexible premium deferred annuity that's not being managed for income, but instead is a place to just have flexibility on a tax-advantaged basis, perhaps, they have such little oomph on an income benefit. They can take money in at any time. It's easy for them to do. Okay, so the whole idea of a flexible premium, when you see that, it means you can put money in. More traditional annuities like the MIGAs we have talked about on previous show, multi-year guaranteed annuities. MIGAs, one-time premium, that's it. Single premium immediate annuity, it's right there in the name, single premium. You put money in once. Most annuities are like that, Chris. So 6 months is flexible compared to most annuities.
True.
Most annuities, you put money in once, that's it. Because the insurance company needs to know the risk they are exposed to on each contract. And they control it by saying, this contract takes money once, and that's it. So to have flexibility is good. But every insurance company is different on how often they're going to give that flexibility. Okay. Deferred annuity. That's the other key here. On the single premium immediate annuity, there's nothing deferred about that. It says immediate. When you a SPIA, single premium immediate annuity, is the mirror opposite of a flexible premium deferred annuity. It's a mirror opposite. So on a single premium immediate annuity, single premium money goes in once, immediate income comes out, generally speaking, between 1 month and 13 months later. You get to choose when you open it. But the income benefit is immediate. He's talking about a deferred annuity. In other words, the insurance company is going to say, you put money in, we'll tell you every year how much interest we're going to pay you. That's what's nice about these. You'll know every year what you're going to get in interest. So we'll tell you every year what we're going to pay you or what we might pay you, depending on how the annuity is set up. Every year, you'll know that going into it. But what the insurance company doesn't know is when are you going to take income? Because you're deferring the ability to take income. And you can defer it for a very long time, much longer than required minimum distributions. Now, some flexible premium deferred annuities or some deferred annuities will require annuitization at some point. Could be 90, 95, 100. It's good to know this ahead of time. But it's can be very, very far out into the future. So annuities don't have the RMD rules that IRAs have. So when you see flexible premium, it means you can put in more than one premium. I just don't know how many more. They all vary. Deferred annuity means you are deferring the income to a certain point in the future, and you can tell the insurance company if you want to take the income. You don't have to. And you can close the annuity in the future and take no income. Just take your money out. That's what's nice about these flexible premiums. Deferred annuities. When you buy an immediate annuity, there's no going back, Chris. You have resigned that I want income and I want it now. I want it and I want it now. But a flexible premium deferred annuity allows people to say, oh, I might want income in the future, I might not. And a lot of times I favor the more flexible ones, Chris, because you might think as a 50-year-old, hey, this is nice. I'm earning a lot of money. Maybe I should put some in here, defer my taxes. And I might or might not want income in the future. Well, even if this annuity doesn't have a great income benefit, you can move it tax-free to an immediate annuity, which would have a massive income benefit in the future. Whereas if you buy some of the other annuities I described, where you might be able to put money in for a few months, there's no taking the money out of that. You're locked into it, and you got to take the income. Now, some insurance companies have products that do still allow flexibility. You see where I could go down rabbit holes on this.
And, a lot of variations.
Yeah, we'll talk about more of these on future shows. So this is some of the things you need to look for, listener, as you evaluate this. I tend to favor and ask clients, what is it we're looking to maximize? Principal protection and tax-deferred growth or income? Because it's hard to find one of these that do both perfectly. And if we're adamant it's income, then I'm going to recommend a totally different flexible premium deferred annuity than if the person is saying, well, I'm just kind of looking for a place to have some flexibility, let the money grow tax deferred, but protect my principal. I'm looking for a little bit of surety. That's what you're paying for on these. Now, there's others where there's no principal protection. They're called variable, they're a flexible premium deferred variable annuity. And on those, and those are the ones Ken Fisher doesn't like, and rightfully so, there's some with wicked high fees. Yeah. But there's others with very low fees. One that we know of, I don't know if I should name it or not, the fee is just $20 a month. It's all you pay, no matter how much money you have in there, and they have about 300 variable investments you can choose from. They're not mutual funds, but they're called separate accounts. They're managed by some very big money managers that the names you would recognize. But the insurance company just charges $20 a month, no matter how much you put in there, to leave your money in. Why do people like those? Well, you can then buy investments inside there and not worry about capital gains, not worry about rebalancing. I know a lot of people sometimes use those style accounts for more aggressive investments, that they might want to take a position in this, but then move it and take a position in that, and move it and take a position in this, and they can do it inside the annuity wrapper without having to pay taxes every time.
But the obvious downside is you expose yourself to actually possibly losing money, in other traditional insurance products, they essentially only have status quo or a win in there. You can make money, but you're never going to get less.
And I will fully say, I'm not a fan of the variability ones. They're out there. I'm just trying to get him to understand. So if he ever comes across one, but I agree totally. Most of the time that I use these, Chris, is for the principal protection, the ones where you're never going to lose. And we kind of use these in the office as a bucket two account. Listeners have heard of our bucketing strategy. We kind of position a flexible premium deferred annuity as a bucket two account, because all of these annuities, though, Chris, the ones that allow you to put money in initially, or the ones that allow you to put money in over a certain number of years, most of them will charge a penalty to take your money back out within a certain period of time. Now, the variable one that I described that the insurance company only charges $20 a month for, there's no penalty. It's completely liquid. Because the insurance company's charging you $20 a month to have it. They don't care when you take your money out. But on the ones that offer principal protection or an income guarantee, they're taking your money and they're going out and investing it, because they got to give you interest on it. And if you close it, it's going to mess up their investment. So they put a limit on when you can take money out without a penalty. The annuity we favor has a 7-year penalty period. And there's another one with a 5-year penalty period. What we often tell our clients, because we like them as bucket two accounts, principal protected accounts that can earn more interest than a bank. But they're really only flexible, Chris, when the penalty period expires.
Right.
Prior to that, they're not that flexible. They'll take as much money going in. They don't care about that. But on the way out, they're going to say, hey, wait a minute. We're paying you interest every year to have this. We're going to declare every year. It's called the declared rate. That's why they call it the declared rate. All of these flexible premium deferred annuities, Chris, not the variable ones. Let's go back to the principal protected or income ones. Have two interest rates, the guaranteed minimum and the current declared. The guaranteed minimum now is usually around 1-1.5%. They're guaranteeing it'll never go lower than that. But the interest you earn is actually called the current declared. The annuity we favor right now has a current declared interest rate, I think, of 2.85%. If you have less than 100,000 in it, 3.25% if you have more than 100,000. That's the current declared 1-year rate. So every annuity will have those two interest rates, current declared and guaranteed minimum. You need to know what they are. The guaranteed minimum, the insurance company is saying the current declared will never go below the guaranteed minimum. The current declared is adjusted every year based on what interest rates are doing. So interest rates are going, you couldn't get these rates, 2.85% on a 1-year current declared rate a few years ago. Short-term interest rates have risen. The current declared rate, Chris, is tied not necessarily to short rates, but it's not tied to long rates. It's more of an intermediate rate. And that's why they put that penalty period on, because they're going to take your money, listeners, and they're going to go out and buy bonds. And they're going to hope to earn more on the bonds than you are going to get in interest. And that's how the insurance company gets paid on these. A unique thing to a flexible premium deferred annuity, a fixed flexible premium deferred annuity, is there's no cost to it. And I have to explain to you, because nothing's free.
No direct cost.
That's right. That's why I said I have to explain to you, nothing's free. That variable annuity I told you about, there's no cost to it on the insurance company level. They're going to charge you $20 a month. They're disclosing that. However, you can only buy it through an advisor. And the advisor is going to put a fee on top of that. He's going to put a quote-unquote management fee on top of it. So the insurance company might be charging you $20 a month. That goes directly to the insurance company. But the advisor is going to charge a management fee on top of that to quote-unquote manage your assets. So it's another reason I tell people you got to be careful on those, because now the advisor might be charging 1.5%, and you're getting right back into that BS. But on a fixed annuity, the insurance companies make, the annuities he's talking about, flexible premium deferred annuity with an income benefit, they make their money, folks, on what is called the yield spread. So when I say there's no cost, Chris is correct, there's no direct cost. They make their money the same way a bank made money when they used to sell CDs. I say used to, they don't. I'm sure they still sell them, but interest rates are so low. But go back 12, 15 years ago now, Chris. You could buy a five-year CD paying 6, 7%. Do you think the bank took that money, went down to the vault, and locked it in the vault in the basement, and then 5 years later gave you all your money back and some interest for the privilege of keeping your money in their safe? No, that's not how it worked. They would say, hey, we're going to pay you 5% for 5 years. I'm making these numbers up, but you get the picture. 5% for 5 years. And they're going to go out and try to lend it to someone. They will take the full risk that the person they lent it to doesn't default, continues to make interest payments, and they'll make you whole if there is a default. And then if the bank went under, the government would make you whole through FDIC. That's how it all worked. But the bank hoped to earn more than the 5% they were paying you. That's called a yield spread in the industry. The bank gets to keep the yield spread. These fixed, flexible premium deferred annuities work the same way, whether he's buying one with the for the income benefit or one for principal protection. These are all operated, Chris, on a fixed chassis. So on a fixed chassis, the insurance company has that guaranteed minimum interest rate, Chris, and the 1 year declared rate. The 1 year declared rate can change every year. The guaranteed minimum can't. That's the lowest it can go. But the insurance company hopes to earn more every year than what they're paying you. Mm-hmm. Now, if they don't, if something were to happen and the bond they purchased with your money defaulted or interest rates didn't rise to the levels the insurance company was assuming and they didn't earn even enough to pay you what they promised, there's where the insurance kicks in. The insurance company has to make you whole and pay you what that guaranteed declared annual rate was. So does that all make sense? Do you understand how they work?
Yep.
Okay. So then how do you get your money out of them? Go back to the annuity that I was chatting about. That one has a 7-year deferral period, Chris. What we generally recommend people do or tell people how you consider the annuities is after 7 years, this particular company, Chris, will let you put, you can put money in at any time, not after 7 years. You can put money in right away. But you have to put in $2,000 at a time. And when you withdraw money, you have to withdraw $500 at a time. Mm-hmm. So it's not a bank. They don't want you putting in $200 and taking out $50 to go to dinner. So once the 7 year period is over, you have to find out from the insurance company, listener, does each subsequent deposit begin a new waiting period? Some annuities, yes. Some annuities, no. Guess which ones I favor? The ones that don't.
Right.
So I can only talk about the one that I'm familiar with, and I don't want to say the names. I don't want people running out and thinking, oh, I heard this on the radio. I'm going to go buy it. But this particular company allows you to put money in at any time during the deferral period. However long you own the annuity, you can put money in as long as it's $2,000 or more at the time. But let's say you open it on day one with $50,000. I'm just making that number up. And then 3 years later, you put in another $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
That three-year money doesn't have to sit in there for 7 years. The seven-year period begins on day one with the first deposit. Mm-hmm. Even if you only put in $100, you can't put in $100. Even if you only put in a few thousand, you could then put $50,000 in 5 years later. That $50,000 only has two more years to go for the penalty period to expire. Once the penalty period expires, a flexible premium deferred annuity listener, the ones that put their oomph in the true flexibility, not the income benefit. The annuity I'm talking about, the income benefit is very minor. But the flexibility is, once that seven-year period is over, you have an account that pays more than any other type of CD or liquid bank account you can get right now. 2.85 or 3.25, depends on how much money is in the annuity. You can't get that on a one-year savings account anywhere. And even the guaranteed minimum, which is 1%, is still higher. Now, it's not at 1, it's at 3.25 or 2.8, but you see how it works. So once the 7 years is over, you can get money out at any time. You call the insurance company, you say, send me a check, send me a check.
But you can't put any more in at that point.
You can. After 7 years, you can keep putting money in.
All that's over is the penalty period?
The penalty period is the only deferral period.
Wow.
So that's how these work. You have to really know, listener, what are the nuances to the annuity you're considering.
So some of these flexible premium deferred annuities are far more flexible than others.
Absolutely. Because I have seen some that every deposit in is a new penalty period.
Mm.
And when you take money out, guess what account they take it from first?
The most recent one.
Which has?
A penalty.
Exactly. So you have to know how the ones you're looking at work. I hate those. I ignore them. I'm with Ken Fisher. I hate those annuities, and so should you. But there's other flexible premium deferred annuities that really are trying to be flexible. They just have that penalty period. What we tell people who counsel with us, put the minimum amount in to open that period, that annuity, just to get the flexible period started. Because once the flexible period is over, you can put money in and take money out as long as you follow their minimum amounts, $2,000 and $500 in this example. You know, you can take $500 out at a time, put $2,000 in at a time. But after the seven-year period, it's a completely flexible annuity, and there's no direct fees to you. 100% of your money is in your annuity. The insurance company gets to use your money while it's in there, and they hope to earn more on it than they're promising you in interest. But they take the lending risk, the prepayment risk, the principal risk. They guarantee your account will never drop. It's always going to earn what the current deferred rate is or what the minimum fixed
guaranteed
rate is.
Minimum, yeah.
Okay, I have to wrap it up because I have another meeting coming in. Do you think I explained that okay, or should we delve into this more?
I think that got a good summary of these FUPDAs, these flexible premium deferred annuities, which we haven't discussed in the past, so it was nice to go over it. And just one of the keys that always is illustrated as we talk through one of these insurance products, there's a lot of good products out there. There's a lot of terrible products out there.
And know your product.
There's no reason to lump them all into one basket. There isn't, insurance products aren't the savior of all financial ills, and they aren't the bane or the enemy of all financial success. As some people put themselves in one of the two baskets. That's absolutionist. That's
and
not,
one of the things
right.
to wrap this up, but to give us a shout out. We are available, we say this all the time, to work with people. We love what we do. We know these annuities. If you're thinking of one and someone's offering you the ability to buy this or that, you can hire us to do an annuity review. Pay us for our time. I'll review the annuity. I'll tell you if I think it's worth it or not. I know a lot about annuities. A lot of people don't. And some people are just acting as salesmen and trying to sell things. I like flexible premium immediate, flexible premium deferred annuities, but I also hate them. But in the right spot and the right one might work perfect.
Great. So glad you joined us this episode of the Retirement and IRA Show. We will be back next week with a brand new show. Should be a live show at that point. So that next live show that you'll have the opportunity to call into if you're interested is going to be Monday the 19th. Should be our next expected live show. Should be approximately 3:30 p.m. Mountain Time. It'll be Mountain Daylight Time at that point because we'll be past the time change here that's coming up this weekend, for us at least. And so you're free to call in or you can email us, jimhelps.com. Happy to be with you.
And one thing I will throw out there, I did say the dreaded word variable annuity, so make sure you play that variable annuity disclosure we have to play.
We have a QLAC disclaimer.
No, the other one. But we'll, for those who want to hear it, it'll be with all the disclosures that are about to be played.
Perfect. So we'll be back with you next week with a new podcast.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Investors should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of investment company products carefully before investing. The prospectus contains this and other information about the investment company. Prospectuses may be obtained from your advisor and should be read in full. All guarantees are backed by the claims-paying ability of the issuing insurer. Withdrawals and death benefits are subject to income tax. If withdrawals and other distributions are received prior to age 59 and a half, a 10% penalty may apply. Shares, when redeemed, may be worth more or less than the original cost.